Good morning. I'm Darrell Gunter, your host for Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM. Today, we're pleased to have Pastor Collins A. Days of Second Baptist Church in our studio today. Pastor Days, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much, Brother Gunter, and glad to be a part of the program.
You know, I think it's important to note that I'm doing a series on Atlantic City, and this series on Atlantic City was prompted by one of your sermons. I was in your congregation on August 21st, where you were speaking to the congregation, and you made a plea to the congregation about not turning a blind eye to crime and that we must be more vigilant and respectful of our neighborhoods. And I went home, or went to my sister's house for dinner that afternoon, and I asked her about that. She said, yeah, folks got this thing where they'll see something, but they won't say anything. And we're seeing a lot of black-on-black crime. And I just wanted to thank you for that inspiration, which has really prompted me to do this series of 8 to 10 interviews of folks from Atlantic City to talk about how can we turn Atlantic City around. So thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. It was good seeing you, too.
All right. And if you could, for our audience, could you give us a little bit of background of the highlights of your education and your experience and how you actually came to Atlantic City?
Well, yeah, I'm from South Carolina, and I attended South Carolina State University as well as Morris in South Carolina. And I was called to this church about 18 years ago from a very rural community called the Roundel community. The church that I pastored was originated and started by slaves. And so it was nothing that in my educational background or my experience prepared me for the urban environment of Atlantic City. I was very taken back by the whole situation. Actually, when I moved when I first came here, the first thing that struck me was the church was located in a very dilapidated area, full of what we call abandoned minions, where the homeless lived, and a tremendous amount of drug addiction and alcoholism, and it was just evident right outside the door of the church. And so that started me to what can we do to empower the community? And through that, we developed a community development corporation to kind of address some of the housing issues and needs of Atlantic City.
And tell us a little bit about your family. You're married and you have children and grandchildren, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'm married for 28 years. I have 4 children and 2 grandchildren, and all of whom live right here in Atlantic City. And so that's one of the reasons that I've always been involved in the community here, because I have a family here. I reside myself in Atlantic City, and I wanted to make sure that my children had a great place to grow up.
And, you know, and that's a very interesting point, Pastor Days, because you've been with the church now 18-plus years, and you have actually raised your family in Atlantic City.
Yeah, I refused to send my kids to private school. I wanted my kids to experience what every other resident experienced. And I always felt if I was going to be a leader here in Atlantic City, pastor here, then my kids needed to experience what the average citizen experienced. And that way I knew I would be committed to the school system and to the neighborhoods.
And what you've said there are some very key and significant things. Do you realize that the current police department, the police officers, do not have to reside in Atlantic City?
Yes, yeah, which is very unfortunate. But that's a part of city fathers have hurt us in that regard. Because it would be whenever someone has a community investment, if they're invested, whether you know their homes, their children, they'll take better care of our community, and they would incorporate themselves within the community more, which make them more acceptable, as well as knowing what's going on in the community.
I agree, and I also think that if there was a policeman living on a particular block, I don't think there would be much crime happening on that block.
Yeah, you would think. I was just recently, my block was, from time to time, it happens. 8 cars were broken into right in my, just about every one of my neighbors.
Oh, wow.
And if there was someone who had a police car, who lived in a police car outside of the yard, it would have been a different story.
That's right. And when did you first realize your aspirations to be a leader? I guess, and to that point, when did you get your first calling from God to be a pastor?
Oh, well, I was I became a minister when I was 18 years old. I was 21 when I pastored my first church. And so most of my life I've been in some leadership role. The first church that I pastored, as I said, was a very historic church. And my oldest deacon was 93, and my youngest deacon was 62.
Oh, wow.
And I was pastoring at 21, so that old school really groomed me for leadership and assisted me in a tremendous way in terms of they were not very educated, but they had tremendous mother wit and a wealth of information from experience, and they helped groom me to whatever I am. I always attribute it to those people who embraced me and loved me and looked beyond all of my faults and misgivings and aided me. So that's where I got it. I got it from. I gleaned a lot from a lot of the older people.
Yes, yes. And at the age of 21, to pastor a church is an awesome responsibility. And how did this all come about? Did you seek them out? Did they seek you out?
They sought me out. That was not my plans at all. Some of the members of the church had heard me preach at other places and invited me, and to my surprise, they called me to be their pastor. And I was very wet behind the ears and didn't know very much about pastoring or leadership at that time in that magnitude. But they held my hand through all of it, and it turned out pretty well.
Yes, it did. Yes, it did. And what do you consider to be the key traits of a great leader?
Humility, a burden for the community, a burden for the people. If you don't have humility and the burden, because if you have humility enough to know that you don't have everything that it takes, and a burden enough to that it has to be done, and if you don't do it, it may not get done. Those two things will cause you to seek help. It will cause you to pray a lot, and it will cause you to not have tenacity enough that when the obstacles come, you won't just take no for an answer, that you'll keep on pushing.
You know, I have been doing, this is my third season, and I asked this question to all my guests, and I've never heard those two words pull together in such a very unique way. Humility and burden. Wow. Very nice, very nice. And as you know, I'm doing a series on Atlantic City, and I'm trying to get to the heart of what are the key issues that Atlantic City is facing, and also what are the potential solutions for those problems. What do you see as some of the three or four key issues that are addressing the people who live in Atlantic City? I'm not concerned about the casino's attendance down. I'm not concerned about that. I'm concerned about the crime that's happening in Atlantic City, or the lack of education that's happening in Atlantic City. From your perspective, Pastor Days, you're there on the ground every day, and you have a number of ministries in the church. What do you see as the key issues?
Well, first of all, let me say, I love Atlantic City. I love living here. I love the people here. It's a tremendous community. But our community is, I think, is a microcosm of a lot of what's going on in the country together. The difference is it's small enough to really effectuate some change. Our issues are we've got a problem with unemployment is key. There's a tremendous problem with unemployment, and for several reasons. I mean, one is we have because of a lack of education, people can't get gainful employment, and if they get employment, it's not enough to get a good living wage. And a lot of that is because of lack of education and because of a record and drug abuse. And so there's only several places you can work in Atlantic City. You either work for the city, you work for the county, or you work for the casinos. And all of those, once you have some kind of record, it knocks you out of the box. And because of that, people are going to eat. And, they're going to eat one way or the other. And so oftentimes they get involved in illegal activity in order to work. And so then that presents a tremendous problem. The other problem is housing. We don't have adequate housing for the city of Atlantic City. And so when there's inadequate housing and lack of money, no jobs, no education. People are crowded into, you know, homes and neighborhoods that, you know, where they have to make a living. What it is, they sell drugs, they you know, prostitution, or some other kind of illegal activity, and they're crowded together, which breeds more and more crime.
And in regards to the education, where does that problem start?
Well, you know, that's a systemic problem. What comes first, the chicken or the egg?
Right.
A lot of that happens with it's generational. You know, we've had a tremendous, we have some a great, you know, we have problems with the education system, but there's a lot of money in brand new schools because of casinos, a lot of new schools. But I don't care how you build a school, you can make it look like the mall.
Mm-hmm.
But if children are not staying, if they're not sticking, if they don't have a home support, you know, if their parents are on drugs and not getting breakfast, they're not getting the kind of, you know, support at home, they're not going to stay. And so that's why we have such a high dropout rate. Or, you know, if they have not had the kind of family support where they can operate in school, you know, they're not going to stay. They're going to get kicked out. And so the problems are so systemic from home and from the environment that we have in Atlantic City. It's very difficult for them to get a good education and stay in school.
And then, of course, if you don't have the housing, you don't have the education, then, of course, that's where the employment issues rise.
Exactly.
Now, I was, during your service on August 21st, you talked about the new casino, Reville, was going to have some community outreach in regards to informational meetings. And one of my earlier guests had talked about Stockton State College is doing training for folks. Do you see that getting to the folks who are most in need?
Well, I look at it from the past. I was in a meeting the other day, and they were asking me to get involved in some of the things as relates to the training. And I said to them I would not do it because they have made so many promises before to get people involved, and that part is true. If they say they're going to have 5,000 jobs available, they'll offer them to the Atlantic City people first, okay. But they know there's a bar that the majority of the people that need work in Atlantic City are not going to make a reach, and they're not going to do what it's going to take, the extensive training and extensive mentoring that it's going to take to help them reach the bar. And then they've got to change some rules. They've got to lower the bar in the sense of they've got to open it up for those who have some criminal records in order for them to work. And if they're not willing to do the hard things, it's not going to happen. And so it's an exercise of futility. And I've been there too many times to do that. And I'm not going to stand with them to validate it when the vast majority of Atlantic City residents are not going to be able to participate in economic renewal because of Rebel Casino.
And so basically, from your standpoint, it was almost like they wanted a pitcher opportunity, but there really wasn't enough emphasis on the core things to really get it right.
Right. Until someone really puts some money and some time and develop a good core program that's going to help people. You know, you have people who've been on welfare for generations.
Right.
You know, you've got to deal with that whole idea of just changing the way they live. You know, you got to deal with the criminal record. You got to make some changes in the Casino Control Commission in terms of what the regulations are going to be. You know, you don't have to put them on a casino floor, but let them at least work in environmental services. Let them get a job somewhere.
Right.
And if they're not willing to do those kind of things, you know, you can say the jobs are open, but if you don't qualify for the jobs, we give you an opportunity, you know. I've heard that too many times, and every year I've been here, every casino that's open, every time they talk about a job fair, it's open to everyone, but most people that get jobs in Atlantic City, they leave the city limits after their shift is over. There's a mass exodus, every shift change.
Right. So basically those jobs are going to folks who are coming from offshore.
Of course. The vast majority, and that's not only in the casinos. That's in the healthcare, for the hospital. That's also so for the school district, and it's also for City Hall.
Well, you know, from what I understand, and I could be wrong, but I try to read as much as I can the press of Atlantic City, the press online. But from what I understand, the mayor's direct reports, I guess his cabinet, they're supposed to live in town by law, but I guess they've all been given a pass where they can live wherever they want.
That's correct.
So
that's a few that lives in the city, but not very many.
Yeah. So, like you said, if you're not living there day to day, you really don't have a stake in the ground. You're not concerned about your tent because your tent is placed somewhere else.
Exactly.
How do the people allow the mayor and his administration to get away with that?
Well, you know, it's frustration. You know, in terms of when you make promises, you've done battle, and it's still more and more the same. Mm-hmm. You know, you just get to a point that, you know, especially now in these times, you're just trying to survive.
Right.
You know,
right.
you're trying to put food on the table and make sure your family's safe, and you want to get home and back in for your neighborhood, you know, with safety, and that becomes then a priority.
Yes.
And so you work on changing what you can change.
Right. Because it is tough times right now. We haven't seen a recession like this in our respective lifetimes.
Yeah, and for a city like us, we feel it pretty good. You know, because a lot of the casino work is, it's feast or famine. You do very well in the summertime, and then you know, people work two or three jobs. They can work them, and then they know they're going to be laid off coming summertime or wintertime.
Right.
And so they're trying to do whatever they can to make sure that their family is taken care of, and and so you're really concentrating on making sure they're okay.
Yep. You know,
later for politics.
Right. You know, it's interesting how the cycle's repeating itself because I recently read the book The North Side by the gentleman who wrote Boardwalk Empire. I don't know if you had a chance to read his book. The author's name is Nelson. But,
right.
But he talked about, you know, the early days, how, you know, the black folks would come into Atlantic City for the summertime. And basically during the wintertime, they were really trying to put food on the table.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's not changed that much. You know, the casinos are open year-round now, but they go to almost a skeleton crew, and now because of the economy, they're cutting back and doing less with more. I mean, doing more with less, and so or doing the same with less, and so it's really difficult.
You know, what's almost, I wouldn't say equally as frustrating, but from a business standpoint, from my perspective, I grew up in Atlantic City, and my mother and my sister still live there. And Atlantic City has some really good assets. It has the beach, it has the boardwalk, it has that nice salt air. And for the city to not be able to market itself to the point where it could be an international destination, it just really, really puzzles me as to why Atlantic City should not be the destination year-round.
Yeah, no, that's what, they've always been trying to reinvent themselves, but it has to be more of a family destination, I mean, in
right.
terms of drawing
that's
more
true.
Families. Because we have, you know, I say all the time, this is a jewel on the East Coast. It's very simple to get to. We're in a tank of gas of over 60 million people. You can come by bus, you can come by car, you can come by plane or train. It's very simple to get here, very easy. And we have some tremendous things to offer,
mm-hmm.
but we could do a whole lot better in terms of marketing and offering a diversity. It's a great place to shop. There's, some great restaurants. But the only thing we really put forth is gambling. I mean, it could be a tremendous place. Got a great convention center.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who want to live by the shore, we have the cheapest real estate right now to get on a beachfront property. You can't live within anywhere in Atlantic City and not be 5 or 6 blocks from the ocean.
That's right.
So it's cheap. So come on down. We'd love to have you.
let's talk about the crime rate in Atlantic City. From your perspective, is it high?
It's intolerable. We have. For a city the size of Atlantic City, I think the land census is less than 50,000 people. For those that we're probably about 60 or 70 by undocumented residents. But for a city this size, and we have a very large police department, we still have at least 15 unsolved murders in Atlantic City.
Wow.
And there is the last murder was happened in the middle of the day in a store that was full of people.
Wow.
And to date, the murder has not been solved. No one saw anything. And that's been the case for the last several murders that we had, that people, you know, just clamored and say anything. Most of the crime in Atlantic City is black-on-black crime, you know, and it's just amazing how, you know, the violence in the city is just intolerable. And something has to be done.
You know, the reason why I asked the question the way I did, because one of my other guests as part of this series had said that he felt that the crime rate was one of the lowest considering the level of population that Atlantic City has. And I almost started to laugh because I said, wait a minute. I know that folks are being shot down and killed in the black neighborhoods, but I let my guest go on to get his perspective across, and that's why I'm happy to have you on the program to talk about what the real crime rate is in the black neighborhoods.
Oh, it's the opposite. I mean, in terms of the violence, you know, per capita, it's the percentage is very high with a small amount of people that we have. You know, but we do understand that, you know, because of Atlantic City and the things that happen, it attracts people not only from the neighborhood but from outside of the city. You know, along with gambling comes other vices, you know, prostitution and drugs. I mean, that's the reality of it. I don't care with all the flashing lights and all of the tremendous decor of the casinos, there are some elements that come along with gambling. And with gambling, you know, comes a part of that is violence.
Right.
And when you got a community that's already depressed, and, you know, you got turf wars, and most of them are retaliation shootings. And unless some, you know, if the police is not doing anything, people take matters in their own hands. And there's a code of silence in this place that is just absolutely remarkable. They try to handle it themselves. Mm. And so that's one issue that we try to deal with, even with families. When we deal with families who are grieving and families who have been a victim of violence, you know, because the first thing that they say, you know, after grieving process, they want revenge, and talking through that process, that, you know, that's not the way to do it. That's not the way to handle it.
And do you think some of this code of silence is out of fear for their own life?
Oh, of course.
If you're a standby witness and you see it, you're like, oh my goodness, if I say anything, this guy might come shoot me.
Because that's what that's the whole thing, and some of the witnesses have been shot. You know, I mean, a lot of people that's been killed. It's not talking about the amount of people that has been shot or stabbed. You know, it's that's a whole nother number, and you're not even dealing with those who have been threatened by people or gangs or a group of people, and so that's an issue. But until someone takes a stand, just yesterday, one of the more notorious apartment buildings. For years, we had issue after issue, drugs, violence, substandard housing. And yesterday was a tremendous success story of a woman just recognized by city council who happened to be a member of our church, who took it upon herself to create a tenant association and then began to take control of their housing. Made complaints to the point that new owners came in, mm-hmm. and they pushed them to upgrade the housing. And then they themselves, she became a construction manager, because no one else who were coming in and managing the building would they always did substandard work.
Mm.
So she became, and the new owner allowed her to become the construction manager, to oversee the work in 166 unit apartment building.
Wow.
And then they also, the tenants themselves, became their own security.
Mm-hmm.
They had investment in their community, in their
right.
home. They
right.
lived there.
Right.
They were tired of shoddy work.
Right.
They organized themselves and made sure that now they oversaw the construction and then took over the security. Mm. They stood at the door. They became the doorman in their community. They knew who lived there, who didn't live there.
Right.
You know, and so they got recognized by city council of turning their domicile around.
Mm-hmm.
160, 13 people.
Wow.
took it upon themselves that we can't take this anymore, and now affected the lives not only the 166 families that live there, but that whole community changed.
Right, right. And that's taking pride in ownership.
Taking pride in ownership. Now, yeah. if those people could do that for their community and their housing unit, we have several others just in the same condition or worse. They can do it. So they can become a model. And so we're looking at how can we take this as a model and then go to the other into the other areas of, that we're having trouble in the neighborhoods, more troublesome neighborhoods, and repeat this.
Right.
It can be done.
Yes.
And it ought to be done.
And do they receive some type of compensation from the owners of the building?
Yes, they work.
Time?
They're employed. They're employed as construction manager. And here they had no public training. They had no training. They had never done that before, but they knew what needed to be done. They knew they had to change their condition.
Right. Yes.
And so then, from time to time, we'd meet, give them whatever guidance we could as some community leaders to help them through the process. And they're doing a tremendous job. The place has made 100% turnaround.
That is excellent.
Still some work to do.
Of course.
But
of course,
the thing is that they've gone so far, and it's just commendable. And so I had to go there last night just to be there to applaud the recognition and the work that they've done.
That is a phenomenal story. Was it covered by the press?
They just got a little. I hadn't read the press today. But they did get some news coverage last night.
Okay,
it was one of the most notorious areas in the city, and it was just a tremendous thing to see that last night.
That is awesome. That is just a phenomenal success story.
Yeah, and it was not done by the politicians. It was not done by the police department or HUD. It was done by the tenants.
Wow, that is awesome. Pastor Days, believe it or not, our time is up.
but it went so quickly.
I know, but you're going to come back for our program next week, correct?
Very good. Look forward to it.
Oh, wonderful. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with Pastor Collins A's Days, who's the pastor at Second Baptist Church in Atlantic City, and I'm so happy to have him on our program. He's going to be back next week. And so, Pastor Days, thanks again, and we look forward to speaking with you next week.
And please give him my best regards.
I certainly will. This is Darrell Gunter, your host of Leadership on WSOU 89.5 FM, Seton Hall University, and streaming on the net at wsou.net. Remember, leadership begins with you. Have a great weekend.